You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com.
Transform the way you hunt with the all-new Base cellular trail camera connected by the Moultrie mobile app. Moultrie Mobile's industry-best app gives you complete control over your camera settings, up-to-the-minute updates from the field, and other interactive scouting tools on your smartphone or computer. Features like weather forecast, advanced species recognition, interactive maps, and a whole lot more. For more information and to make your purchase, visit www.moultriemobile.com.
You're listening to the Average Conservationist podcast, brought to you in partner with 2% for Conservation. 2% for Conservation's mission is to create an alliance of businesses and individuals that ensure the future of hunting and angling by committing their time and dollars to fish and wildlife. 1% of your time plus 1% of your money equals 2% for Conservation. 2% helps businesses and people pair with conservation causes to support things that fit what they care about. Whether you're into fishing, hunting, or just getting outdoors, 2% can help you not only start giving back to wildlife, but get certified for it. Getting 2% certified means you've made the same commitment as popular brands like Sitka, Stone Glacier, and Seek Outside in giving at least 1% of your time and dollars back to wildlife. But it's not just for outdoor companies. Breweries, contractors, coffee roasters, and even piano repair companies have earned 2% certification and stand out as leaders in their community for doing so. Businesses that are committed to conservation deserve your business when you shop. Learn more about 2% for Conservation at fishandwildlife.org. That's fishandwildlife.org. What's up, everyone? Good morning. Welcome back to the Average Conservationist podcast, and I'm your host, Marcus Ewing. Today on the podcast, I have with me David Lynn, and David is the owner and founder of 2% Certified Veridity. And Veridity is a brand design, a brand strategy design consultancy. And what that means is they are helping companies and brands specifically related to the outdoors or that are operating in the outdoor space. And they're helping them really find the customers and the target audience that they're really going for, and making sure that the design that they're branding actually has a message and connects with the customers that they're really trying to reach. David kind of walks me through the process of what it looks like when speaking with a customer, the goals, the objectives, everything that they have, and really it's quite a long process from start to finish on everything that they're doing. They're not a company or an outfit that's trying to just implement kind of a quick fix or anything like that. They're really doing their due diligence along the way and making sure that they're acquiring all the right knowledge and information from themselves, from the team that they're working with, to likely the target customer, the target audience, and building a plan and again a strategy around all of that. So pretty interesting stuff there. David, being in Arkansas and growing up in Arkansas, they have a very rich tradition of the outdoors, and David kind of talks about what the outdoors looks like to him, how he was first introduced at a young age, and really what he gets to spend his time on. It's what he gets to spend his time doing in the outdoors these days as well. So, episode 102, David Lynn, enjoy. David Lynn, welcome to the podcast. How's everything going today?
Hey man, it's doing good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem at all. I know we spoke earlier today, and then obviously before recording here, but I know you're a bit under the weather. Allergy season is hitting you hard, much like myself, but I appreciate you being a trooper and still agreeing to do this and powering through here.
Yeah, of course, man. We're on the better half of it, but we'll just see how it goes.
Yeah, there you go. So David, let's kind of jump right into things here. Tell me about Viridity and what it is, and really kind of the origin story behind it, if you will.
Man, so we are a brand strategy design consultancy, which I know is a big mouthful, but we provide brand identity design, digital design, and strategy for outdoor companies that kind of need to clarify their purpose, like find their voice, understand who their target customers are, and kind of help them define their goals, like an overarching, I guess, strategy for your brand. But it started almost a year ago, and we were working with all sorts of companies that were, you know, from all different industries. And then kind of in the fall, it really did hit me that, you know, hunting and conservation and organizations like that are kind of on the decline just a little bit, just as we become more of an inside culture. More people are not looking towards the outdoors to escape. And so we want to help companies branch into new territories and find new types of customers that maybe, you know, haven't been kind of targeted by the outdoor industry and stuff like that.
You know, you said something there that I could not agree more with. When you said we're kind of heading towards being an indoor society. And that's, you know, I haven't had someone describe it or say it quite like that. But when it is, when you do describe it like that, it kind of hits home a little bit. Because I've talked to plenty of guests in the past who talk about, you know, when they grew up, as opposed, you know, how the outdoors was and you know, how much time we spent outside as kids, because, you know, we didn't have all these distractions, right? There wasn't the internet, there wasn't cell phones, you know, whatever. There was, you know, Saturday morning cartoons, and the rest of the time you were on your own to try to occupy yourself. And the outdoors was just a super great way for kids to get out and play. And you're right. It's scary to think that, you know, kids growing up nowadays, while for the most part they still have those same opportunities to get outdoors, to, you know, build forts in the woods, to go for hikes, to go fishing, whatever the case is, it's just, it's sometimes a bit more difficult. So sometimes we take the easy way out, and that's, you know, being an indoor society. But I really liked how you are trying to angle people or brands away from that to, you know, engage their customers, to engage, you know, yeah, their customers, I guess, is just the best word for it, and really show them how great the outdoors really is, you know?
Right. I mean, like you said, you were talking about young kids being inside all the time. Like, it is vitally important for young children to be outside exploring the world, you know, and just venturing into the unknown and enjoying it. It's crucial for their development.
Yeah, absolutely. So how was it that you decided to start Viridity, you know, did it start a year ago, or was a year ago kind of just when you really made that change and that shift to kind of working with more outdoor related brands?
It started almost a year ago, and then about the December, January period of this year is when we really started to try to focus more on outdoor companies, and that's when we changed the name to Viridity, and just to give us a better identity. You know, what Viridity actually means is the state or quality of being green, and so I thought that was very important for design to be that way as well.
Yeah. So what did your background look like prior to starting the company? I mean, did you have a lot of experience, or were you doing this you know, somewhere else and then just decided to branch out on your own?
Man, I've been doing design work since, I guess, I was in high school, probably sophomore year of high school. I had one teacher who really took me under his wing and just kind of showed me the ropes, how to use the programs, because he knew I had an eye for design. And I've just, you know, took off ever since. I was doing some freelance work for about 4 or 5 years And then I really decided that it was time for me to start my own agency. And that's what took me to where I am today.
Yeah. So how many people do you have working with the agency? Is it, I'd imagine it's a small team, but you know, maybe it's not. What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty small. I run most of the day today, and then most projects, you know, it really just depends on, you know, the company. If you have a super large size company, then I'll I contract out most of the design work. Because we'll have a brief period of kind of understanding the style and like direction that we want to go towards for the project. And then I will go to the network of designers that I have and just kind of hand cull and pick who would best be able to work on that style. And then that's how, and then we move forward from there.
Yeah. So kind of, if you can walk me through the process of really, so, you know, a brand or a company reaches out, they want to either rebrand or, you know, really focus or hone in, you know, what their message is as a brand. So what is, I guess, kind of, you know, start to finish, what does that process look like for you, for your team, and for the customer involved?
So I'd say for if we're going to do just like a regular, like you want to update your brand and, you know, also that includes a website. You know, you can't have your old brand on your website. But so we'll start for the first month of a project. They usually last anywhere from 6 to 8 months for a full project. But for that first month, maybe month and a half, is the discovery and brand strategy phase. So it's a phase where, you know, we'll uncover insights about your target audience or customer. And Veridity will, and then we will interview key stakeholders to see what their project specific goals and benchmarks are. And these little sessions last in between like 2 and 3 hours. And we get to know your audience, organization goals, like I said, your brand story, where you've come, why you've decided to do this now. And then we try to focus on the customer experience and like their journey going through your business from start to finish, and why, and trying to figure out how we can make them not a customer but a loyal fan of your business. And then did you have a question?
Nope, go ahead, keep going.
Then we have once we've got that locked in, we'll submit all of that info to the stakeholders, you know, CEO, president, stuff like that, and let them go over it and kind of see if, you know, it feels right for their brand. If not, we'll go and we'll revisit certain topics. But if we've got it locked in, we'll move into the branding phase. Excuse me. And so we'll start with 3 different stylescapes. So it's just, you know, it includes logo, the look and feel of your brand, how the inside of your office is going to look, and it'll be in 3 different styles. And so we'll present that to stakeholders and just kind of have them pick and choose. And we'll also send it over to people that we're interviewing as their target audience and kind of see what they would like to see in an outdoor company, you know, how it would make them feel, kind of get their emotions based off of the design. And so once we've got that locked in, we go into logo design, brand messaging, and just kind of user experience like I was talking about earlier. And then once that's done, once the branding phase is done, we issue a style guide to the company. This is kind of a usage guide, how, you know, you should use your logo here, you know, on a t-shirt, billboard, Instagram, whatever. And then we'll move into the website phase, which is pretty straightforward. We'll design a basic, we have a strategy session for the website, kind of how we want the user, how it would flow for a customer, making it just easy as possible, because the last thing anybody wants is a frustrating or complicated website. And then we just kind of lock it in like that, and we're good to go.
Yeah, so that's super in depth, and what I mean, or to me, where the depth of things really come from is all of the due diligence that you guys are doing on the front end, you and your team, of, you know, talking to, you know, key stakeholders, but also, you know, interviewing, you know, what is assumed to be kind of the target audience or the target customer of the brand, and then working, almost working backwards, right? Finding out, you know, going to the end user, what you want the results to be, and say, okay, how do we fix this process, you know, almost or reverse engineer it, I guess, to get to the starting point that's going to have, you know, the highest impact, you know, the biggest impact, the right impact, send the right message, like you said. And when, you know, I've seen, you know, different businesses or companies that talk about, you know, branding and, you know, strategy, maybe not necessarily like from a design standpoint, but like how to, you know, better enhance your reach, especially like through social media, because that's obviously what a lot of people are using and doing right now to spread the message of their business. But they always seem to be like these, you know, 2-3 week, maybe a month process of, okay, this is what, you know, you're doing, this is how we should change it, this is what's worked for everyone else. So they almost try to apply the same approach to all their different potential customers or their customers. And, you know, you guys are doing something completely different. And I think that that is probably what leads to the success of your customers and your clients.
Yeah, man, because if you try to put just a blanket template style on everything, it's only going to affect, you know, one group of people. I mean, all you have to do is take a walk outside and you can see how many different people we have on this planet with all different kinds of interests and views and what they like to see and stuff like that. So that's why we try to narrow down a target audience, like the minimum viable audience that we can go for that can also keep your business running. And that's who we will cater their business towards.
So at the end of, you know, the 6-8 month time period that you were just kind of going over, how are, you know, you and the team that you have at Viridity there, how are you able to really gauge success for the customers? Because, you know, is it, you know, more sales of a particular product? Is it just, you know, more engagement through the website? Or, you know, I mean, obviously every business and what they're doing is a bit different, so the goals are going to be a bit different. But, you know, from your guys' standpoint, you know, how are you able to, you know, one, show the customer like, hey, this is, you know, this is what we planned, this is our goal, our end objective. But then also in turn, you know, feel good about, yes, like this is what we set out to do and, you know, we nailed it, right? Like how are you able to gauge that?
Yeah, that's a great question. usually it's based on like how confidently can the stakeholders and, you know, employees of a company, how confidently can they stand behind their brand so much to where they can start building up a loyal fan base for their company. And once the loyal fan base starts coming, that's how we know that we've succeeded. So it could take 3 months to a year to see results.
Yeah. Now, in your experience, what would you say is, I guess, the biggest mistake that brands are making or that companies are making when trying to reach their target audience? Is it, you know, they just are using approaches that they've seen elsewhere? Is it that they're just, they don't really know what their target audience is? I mean, what are you seeing with customers that you're working with?
Number one thing is, like you said, they don't really know what their target audience is, so they try to market to everybody, and that doesn't work. You know, all you have to do is go to YouTube, and the first thing you're going to click is the skip ad button.
Yeah.
Because it's trying to market to everybody, and when you do that, you market to no one. And I really think that's the biggest struggle that people are having, is trying to narrow down a specific group of people that they want, that a company would want them to use their product and enjoy it. And another thing is just a terrible product that doesn't help people at all. And people are just trying to push that, and that doesn't work either. You know, especially as, you know, younger generations like X, millennials, and Z, as they're starting to move up, we're becoming more focused on the experience of a company, how they're impacting the world, and stuff like that. Whereas with older generations, that wasn't really much of a concern.
Yeah, that's a good point. The people who are more the groups, whatever, who are more vocal, right, about their buying experience, about they want to have they want that experience, like you just said, the, you know, to when they're supporting a brand, when they're buying, you know, whether it's a fishing rod, you know, a bow, a t-shirt, a hat, whatever it is, they want to be part of kind of that group, right? Like if you're shooting a Matthews bow or a Hoyt or a Prime, like you want to be part of like that group of people who shoot that. And it's something to, you know, kind of hang your hat on, and just like there's kind of an unspoken community, right, amongst people who support the same brand. And I feel like, yeah, this younger generation wants to be a part of something, right? And that's why having that message with the brand and having that story allows them to feel part of something, I guess, right?
Right, exactly. And I liked what you said about Matthews and Hoyt, because, you know, like you said, there are huge groups of people who are very dedicated, loyal people to those two brands, you know, and it's because they create high quality bows, and that, you know, results in high quality results.
Yeah. So you said it was about December, I believe, of last year when you made the switch and decided to focus kind of solely on outdoor brands. Is the outdoor something that has always been like a critical part of your upbringing and your life?
Oh, man, yeah. As a kid, like every weekend, was, you know, going camping, going fishing, you know, being outside playing with my brother in the yard. You know, it was just always something that we did around here. And I mean, I guess I'm just, you know, blessed to have grown up in the natural state where we preserve a lot of public land and keep it open for our citizens to enjoy. And so there's, you know, you're always 10 minutes away from a state park or a WMA or just a body of water where you can go fish. So it made it a lot easier.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, Michigan is, there's certain parts of Michigan, I guess, you know, as you get into southern Michigan, there certainly is public land, but it's not as abundant as it is in other parts of the state. But that's what's so great about, you know, some of these, you know, because Michigan, while we have a very deep heritage or tradition in the outdoors, it's not really one of those states that is like, you know, real sought after in terms of, you know, whitetail hunting or, I mean, we have some great trout streams and fisheries here in Michigan, but it's not one of those places like, you know, Montana or Utah or Colorado that people are like, yeah, I've got to go there. I've got to hunt or I've got to fish this area. Like, how is it in Arkansas? I mean, what is the tradition and kind of the heritage of the outdoors like there?
Man, so before we were the natural state, we were called the Wonder State. And then before that, we were known as the Bear State because of the huge population of black bears we had here. So that really gave birth to a lot of our outdoorsmen, mountain people, and especially in Ozarks, more mountain-centric life, and that just really bred into our hunting experiences and stuff like that. And later on, as we became more agrarian, especially in East Arkansas, we started having rice fields and stuff like that a little closer to the Mississippi, and that's what really brought the ducks. It was the Mississippi flyway, and so that was, you know, I've been going duck hunting almost every year since the beginning of high school with my friends. That was just always something that we did whenever season rolled around. And in Stuttgart, Arkansas, it's kind of self-named the duck capital of the world, but there's people who come from all over the world to hunt in Stuttgart.
So, you know, obviously being, you know, in the outdoors at a young age, what did you kind of cut your teeth on in terms of hunting?
Well, I mean, hunting, it was with my dad sitting in the stand with him as an extra pair of eyes when I was too little to hold a gun. But then that kind of moved into more duck hunting later on. Because I'm going to admit, it's a little hard for me to sit still for that long. So I definitely enjoy duck hunting a little more than whitetail hunting.
Yeah, and there's certain things about just bird hunting in general, right? Whether it's waterfowl, upland, is the kind of the camaraderie that comes with it. The more social aspect of it, right? Where, you know, especially like upland hunting, you're walking around, you're talking, you know, you got the dogs working. It's a much more interactive experience. Whereas, opposed to whitetail hunting, which is, very sedentary in nature for the most part. It's, you know, by yourself. It's a lot of quiet. I certainly enjoy that. Enjoy the social aspect, I guess, of bird hunting as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, there's nothing like it than sitting with all your buddies in the blind, you know, and then just that hugest horde of ducks comes over, and just that excitement, the adrenaline rush, and everything like that. It's just, you can't compare it to anything.
Yeah. So is that what you spend most of your time doing now, then, is waterfowl hunting?
Waterfowl? I do a lot of whitetail with my father-in-law, and then, just fishing now, since we're more into the summer months. But I guess still spring, but feels like summer already.
Yeah, we're knocking on the door. We've passed the midway point here of May, so we can say we're into the summer pretty much. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's especially, you know, kind of down south there where you're at. Yeah, it's got to be a lot warmer than it is up here.
Yeah, it's been 90s all week.
It's definitely a lot warmer down there than it is up here. So, kind of, you know, speaking of the outdoors and what you're spending your time with, how was it, David, that you learned about 2% for conservation?
Man, I think I was looking at different conservation organizations just all across the country, looking at ones that I wanted to support and stuff like that. And I just wanted to find a better way to, you know, initiate the conversation, be able to talk to them and stuff like that, kind of see where they were needing help. I cannot remember for the life of me what website it was, but I saw their badge in the footer of their website that was said certified 2% conservation business. And so I clicked on that, and I just really wanted to learn more and stuff like that. And that's what led me talking to you guys about getting certified ourselves.
Yeah. So what are some of the organizations that Viridity is working with and giving back to?
So the four that we have listed on the website is Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, Buffalo River Foundation, Delta Waterfowl, and then Arkansas Wildlife Federation. Because 2%, they work with businesses all over the United States that all have been, a vast majority of them support the same, you know, the big three like BHA, Teddy Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, and then, National Wildlife Federation.
Yeah.
But we decided that we wanted to focus on something a little more local to make an impact in Arkansas, which is why we chose Buffalo River Foundation and Arkansas Wildlife Federation.
Yeah, and I love that approach. And anyone who's listened has heard me talk about this more than once. But, you know, if that's where you're spending all of your time recreating, you know, for the most part anyway, let's say, you know, 80, 90% there in Arkansas, to find local organizations that are, helping support, especially things that you like to do. I mean, I know Delta Waterfowl, for example, is a much larger, or is a, you know, a large conservation organization, but, you know, you're big into waterfowl hunting. So finding organizations that, you know, fit what, you know, you care about, that support what you care about, is great. And then again, kind of working from the local standpoint, it's also, it's a place where you can feel like you have a direct impact, you know, because while these, the, you know, kind of the big three, like you mentioned there, are amazing organizations, sometimes, you know, if there's maybe not a lot of activities you can get involved with at a local level, whether there's, you know, maybe there's not a local chapter near you or whatever the case is, it can feel like you just, you know, you pay your dues or you pay your membership fee and then that's it, right? But wanting to actually do more to, you know, get your boots on the ground, to get your hands dirty, finding organizations that are in your backyard, those are the ones where at the end of the day you can say, yep, I was a part of this, or you're helping maintain trailheads or keeping waterways clean. Yeah, that's where I feel like a lot of people get the most satisfaction from a giving back standpoint.
Right, exactly. And, you know, as 2% keeps sweeping across the country and people start choosing more local organizations, you know, that will make a huge difference in just across the country working with local conservation organizations.
Yeah, because 2% is doing a great job, or what they're doing a great job of. Yeah, they don't limit people to who they can give back to, or, you know, what giving back looks like to them. You know, it's everyone is in different areas, has different organizations, but it, like you just said, it shines a much brighter light on a lot of these small local orgs, especially when we get a chance to come on here and talk about an organization, and maybe there's people, you know, that will listen to this episode that are in, you know, the Little Rock area or in Arkansas. Maybe they weren't familiar. They hear about this and now they want to get involved, right? So it's almost kind of creating this little ripple effect that hopefully reaches more and more individuals.
I hope so.
As, you know, someone who's you know, for you, David, who's spent, you know, a majority of their life in the outdoors in some way, shape, or form, now working and creating your own brand and company that's helping other, you know, outdoor businesses or business-minded or outdoor-related, outdoor-minded businesses succeed in their mission. Are there, you know, issues kind of in maybe your specific area or, you know, in Arkansas that is something that you guys are trying to focus on with your efforts, or that, you know, needs to be addressed and you're, you know, trying to help kind of raise some awareness for that?
Man, if you'd asked me that a couple of years ago, I would have said the management of black bears in our state, but our population is exploding. But right now, our small elk population that we do have that we're trying to reintroduce, it is slowly and slowly just trickling down in numbers. And so that's one thing I would really like to focus on for the rest of this year, is funding some elk projects up near the Buffalo River.
And do you guys have an elk season in Arkansas, or is it the numbers just too low to where there's no tags being issued?
It's very limited draw on elk tags. I'd say they only give about 50 away.
Okay. Yeah, so we have an elk population in Michigan as well, and I mean, I'm probably going to butcher this, but I'm just going to go with, I think, what I had saw most recently. I think there's maybe 400 tags, 300 tags that are given out a year, and that may even be a stretch. It may even be like 200. It's basically like a once-in-a-lifetime tag if you draw it in Michigan. Like, just the odds of drawing it twice are just, you know, so minuscule that it's just, you know, call it a once-in-a-lifetime tag. What do you think, you know, or based on, you know, what you've read, what you've seen, why do you think that that population is on the decline?
Man, I was listening to one of the statements from our Game and Fish Commissioner, and he was just saying they have oversupplied tags for the number of calves that are being born. And so they've pulled it back just a little bit for this upcoming season, just to see if that will help with the population. And then also, you know, we've had crazy weather here that's been back and forth, just being right in like the temperate band of the United States. And so that really doesn't help with the, getting a stable kind of rhythm to be breathing in.
Yeah. And that is from an elk hunting standpoint there. I mean, when people are getting these tags, like, are they, I mean, what's the success rate? Do you know, is it pretty high? I mean, it sounds like it, if, you know, we're, you know, more cows than calves are being born every year, but is it a pretty high success rate?
I wouldn't know. I'd have to look that up. I assume it is, since our population's decreasing a little
right,
bit.
Right.
But I'm not sure. I'd have to get back to you on that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was more just out of curiosity. Because I know, again, referring back to Michigan here, the success rate is fairly high for people who harvest that get, because they're in Michigan, like they're very kind of focused in kind of one, you know, specific region of the state. So, you know, people who have been putting in for, you know, elk points and elk tags for, you know, years and years, they already know, you know, where they're going to be hunting for the most part. And maybe have hired people to help them locate herds, or people who have been tracking herds for, you know, the fall into, or, you know, the summer into the fall. So it's elk hunting in Michigan is not like elk hunting out west by any stretch of the imagination. So when you know you're working with these customers and you know, talking about conservation, like is the conservation side of things something that comes up often, you know, when discussing, you know, strategies and, you know, really just a brand identity with these customers?
It does. It's kind of one of the main core tenets. You know, we don't really like to work with a whole lot of people who aren't conservation oriented. And so, yeah, just like what, like works that they are passionate about and stuff like that. That's really something that we try to focus on, because it makes the company seem more human when you actually see humans, you know, that are working there.
Right.
And see what they're doing outside and how they are contributing to the outdoors. And for all outdoor companies, conservation should be an important thing, because without conserving the outdoors, you know, they'll go away and then your company will go away.
Yeah, isn't it almost jaw-dropping the amount of companies that are directly selling, or they're selling a product that is directly related to outdoor recreation that aren't giving back to conservation in some way?
Yes, it is very jaw-dropping. It doesn't make sense, you know. It's
you know, and that's...
I don't know how to...
And I agree, because, I mean, even if you just take, I mean, you go through the 2%, the Fish and Wildlife page, and you look at, you know, the list of business members, and there is, obviously, there's some real heavy hitters in terms of, you know, name and brand recognition that are in there. And kudos to those companies, because, you know, they're a bigger company, and they're, you know, choosing conservation as an important pillar of what their brand is and what it stands for, giving back both their time and their money. And then, you know, you have, you know, companies like yours and mine, right? We're small, you know, companies, small organizations, but we still see the importance, right? Like the money that our companies donate is, you know, much smaller than, you know, someone like Sitka or Go Hunt or something along those lines, right? And for there to be other, you know, massive manufacturers, we'll just say, that aren't giving anything back to conservation, and then people still choose to support them, which, you know, I get that, you know, if you need a bow or, you know, a firearm or something like that, you know, there's, and you're looking for someone who gives back to conservation, I'm sure you can probably find some, but, you know, maybe it's, you know, maybe that limits you to one, you know, manufacturers or something like that. And you just, you don't have the options. But I mean, these people are selling a product that directly helps take from the land, and they're not giving anything back. And it's heartbreaking because, you know, the impact that companies of, you know, that size could have on conservation in the outdoors would be huge for everyone involved.
Yeah. And like I said, it is heartbreaking. It is highly unbalanced. And, you know, I mean, if you look at the early 20th century, we took a lot from the land and didn't give anything back. And now we are still recovering from that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, David, you kind of touched on it earlier, but I just wanted to kind of ask directly, but why is conservation so important to you, and why is it such an important part of Viridity and what it is that you guys are doing?
And there is an awesome quote by Jennifer Clark about conservation. And she says, conservation means you and I and every other person on this planet taking positive, responsible action to ensure that the planet continues to live so that we can live on it. It's just, if we don't take care of it, you know, it's not going to take care of us.
Yeah. I mean, that's the truth. Yeah. I mean, I don't really have a good follow up to that, because that's kind of spot on. And yeah, that's, you wish more people would take that approach, I guess, is kind of the bottom line. So do you have, as you know, we're getting into the summer, you got the fall, you know, right behind it, you know, do you have any like big trips or like anything like that planned, or are you, you know, kind of planning to do a lot of your recreating right there in Arkansas?
Yeah, a lot of it right here in Arkansas. I would like to get down to Texas just a little bit. Maybe on the Guadalupe River, have a couple camping trips. But, you know, I can't look too far ahead into the future. But, yeah, most of it will be done in Arkansas, I think, for this year at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any, I guess, big trips planned locally there? You know, do you guys do like a deer camp, or you know, for opening day of waterfowl, is there, you know, big traditions that you guys have with your friends or your family?
Yeah. In high school, we would all go up near northeast Arkansas, and we would just camp out the night before opening day of waterfowl season in a little shack, and then we'd all cook together and then get up in the morning and go hunting. And then mainly for whitetail hunting, I like to go up near the Buffalo River. Got another camp up there with a few friends. And we go up and then just, you know, mainly hang out, smoke some barbecue if we don't get anything to cook. And, I just like hanging out.
Yeah, no, that's the beauty of just the outdoors in general, is, you know, just being able to kind of disconnect, right, from your phones, from emails, computers, whatever the case is, and, you know, just enjoy the company of friends and family, enjoy nature, and yeah, just unwind, just relax. It's very therapeutic in so many different ways.
Right, just to relax, not be lethargic, but just to, like you said, just enjoy nature with friends and family. There's nothing like it. It can bring you closer to friends and family as well.
Yeah, and it's also a great way to kind of recharge too, especially, you know, I think about the amount of thinking that I get done when I'm sitting in a tree stand, right? Just when you don't have the distractions, your thoughts and everything become much more clear, and you become much more focused. And I think it's, you know, not only because there's not the distractions, but you're also, you know, when you're sitting there with, you know, a rifle or a shotgun or a bow or whatever, like it's a much more primal feeling, you know, knowing that you're out there to kill a deer or, you know, birds, whatever. And yeah, it's a different mindset that you're in when you're out there, for sure.
Right.
So
it speaks to that part of the brain that doesn't get spoken to in our regular everyday life.
Yeah, it's often neglected, I feel like. And yeah, when you let it speak, you know, that's when you listen.
Exactly.
So, Dave, before I let you get out of here and rest your voice and get back to resting here, Where can people find Veridity? You know, whether they want to learn more, follow along, just where, what's the best place to contact you or to see some of the work that you've done?
Yeah, to see some of our work and contact us, I would say our website would be the best. But we're also on Instagram, LinkedIn, and you can find me on LinkedIn as well. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, what's the website there, David?
It is Veridity.net, Viridity.net.
Perfect, perfect. Well, David, I also forgot to mention, I know you just got married a few weeks ago, so an official on the air congratulations on your recent wedding. You know, I hope
appreciate
that,
it.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope that you and the wife have a long, happy life together, that you guys continue to, you know, do this great work through Veridity for conservation. And yeah, thank you for joining me today, man. I really appreciated hearing your story and more about the company.
Yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate that, and thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll talk soon, and take care of yourself.
Yeah, you too.
All right, thanks, David. All right, well, a big thank you to David for joining me on the podcast today. I would also like to thank the partners of the podcast, Stone Glacier and Go Hunt, as well as 2% for Conservation. And if you're interested in learning more about 2% for Conservation, you can visit their website, fishandwildlife.org. And there you can see all the certified brands that have committed to conservation that you should support when you shop. I also encourage you guys to give 2% a follow on social media, where it's going to be only positive conservation-driven content coming through in your feeds as well. So again, if you'd like to learn more about 2% for Conservation, you can look for them online on social media or at fishandwildlife.org. Thanks for joining me this week, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Stay tuned next week. And remember to stay safe out there, and that conservation starts with you.